Welcome to the podcast. This episode is brought to you by Maison Beljanski, providing natural supplements for helping your body's healing and wellness, inspired by over 40 years of groundbreaking research. Today, we are joined by Dr. Tom O'Brien, who is a world-renowned expert on autoimmunity, everything autoimmune. You've probably seen some of his documentary series, his summits, a lot of the work he does through thedoctor.com on helping educate people, patients, and doctors around the underlying root causes of inflammation, chronic inflammatory diseases in the body, which autoimmunity is directly stemmed from chronic inflammation, not to mention cancer, diabetes, heart disease, just about every major disease that we experience today. And I was speaking with Dr. Tom, this was probably, what, 6 or 7 months ago, I think. You were on, I think, one of my programs. We were doing an interview, and we were talking about the brain and how chronically inflamed so many people's brains are, and how, you know, this is contributing to Alzheimer's and dementia, and just how those neurological diseases are exploding. And you had mentioned a specific test called the Neural Zoomer Plus. And you said I should do it, and it's something that pretty much everybody should do to see where the inflammation levels are and the triggers are in your brain, to see basically the health of your brain and then be able to have some guidance on what to do to help prevent some of these diseases down the road and help improve the health of your brain. I said, okay, cool, let's do it. So, and you said, if you do the test, I'll come back on with you and actually go over it and share all the details and results with you. So I did the test. The test actually was back in July. So we're doing this a few months later at the time we're recording this, but I got the results. I don't understand just about anything about it. And I know you have prepared an entire presentation to go through it. So we're going to look literally under the hood into my brain, going to get into my skull and look at my brain and see what's going on. And this is somebody who, you know, has been, who used to be, I would say, living a very, very unhealthy life. And then about 19 years ago, started shifting. And over the last decade plus, 15 plus years, you know, primarily organic, plant-based, lots of fresh foods, whole foods, certainly not perfect at any of it, but so, you know, sauna, exercise, sleep, meditation, all the things that we teach, infrared, you know, ice baths, all the things in terms of helping to prolong health and longevity and vitality, and as well as doing detoxes and cleanses and heavy metal detoxes and all these things. And even so, living, you know, what I would say is a pretty incredibly healthy life from our modern standards, I know we're going to see some things in this report that show some inflammation and some things to watch out for. So I'm interested to see what's there and then how people watching this can learn, you know, what they need to do to help protect their brain. So anyway, Dr. Tom, thanks for doing this. Thanks for encouraging me to do this. And thanks for coming on the podcast to talk about it.
Thanks, Nathan. Thanks so much. I've got a couple of questions for you to begin with. And the first one is, as knowledgeable as you are, and that was a great summary of how you've transitioned your life into a much healthier life in the last 18 years, when you saw those test results, what happened for you?
I mean, you know, when I see like the yellows and, you know, there's a lot of greens, right? There's a lot of in ranges. And then there's a number of yellows and there's some reds, which are obviously things we're going to get into of like, okay, these are some things we need to look at. I looked at it and I thought, actually, you know, the amount of greens that are there is a pretty high amount, meaning things that are in reference, right? And I thought, okay, so I'm obviously doing something right.
That's but anytime, exactly right.
Yeah, and then anytime you see some reds and some yellows, you're like, okay, I need to pay attention. And so I didn't feel like, you know, I've done a number of, you know, blood tests, extensive blood tests over the years, because I do different kinds of experiments and I'll document it. And so, you know, when I look at my extensive, you know, inflammatory markers and blood tests and so forth, most of the time, 80, 90% of the time, everything's in range, but there's always something, you know, there's always something that's out of range that needs to be looked at. And I've just accepted that that's the modern world we live in, you know. Mm-hmm. we're
Well, you've
and
got
we
a
just we just have to do what we can to combat and you know, not worry so much about it, but take action to live the healthiest that we can, I think.
brilliant. That's a great overview to have. And for those that are not as experienced in reading test results as you are, green, yellow, red is common with most tests, most functional tests. Green means you're good to go, everything's great. Yellow means you're going through a flashing yellow light. What does that mean? Well, it means you slow down and you look both ways to see if there's a car coming, meaning something's not, this is a danger zone. You might want to be looking at this. And red means stop. Stop and address it. Well, how do you address it? Well, that's what you have to find out. You know, what are the areas that are in the red zone and how do I address it? So that's a general overview of how to look at all of this. This test, you know, we're going to talk a lot about why this test is important. For me, I won't see a patient unless they do this test. And you're going to learn here, you'll see some of the science that it's one of the earliest markers of inflammation causing tissue damage in your body and while you feel fine. Now, the importance of that concept is that we know that Alzheimer's develops over 25 to 30 years while you feel fine. You feel fine, but the mechanism's going on. And that's really important to grab onto. So it doesn't matter how you feel right now in terms of do I look to see if there's underlying mechanisms going on? It doesn't matter how you feel. And we spoke on your last podcast, Blue Cross Blue Shield published in February of 2020. No, 2019. No, 2020. February of 2020, they said, we've got a problem here. But no one paid attention to it because that's when the virus came out. But they said, you know, in the previous 4-year period, there was a 407% increase in the diagnosis of Alzheimer's in 30 to 44-year-olds
You
in
said
4 years.
400% increase? Is that what you said?
407%
407% in
four
30 years.
years.
That's very, it's crazy to hear, and it's actually in alignment with the cancer increase as well. There was a recent study that came out that, you know, cancer in younger people has gone up something like 79%. We're talking 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, you know, in the last
And
20
there's
years or
some
less.
discussion that maybe some vaccinations have contributed to that, maybe not. But this Blue Cross Blue Shield was before this pandemic. So it had nothing to do with anything except lifestyle. And so it's important for everyone to have a grasp of this particular topic because it's so prevalent now. So let's jump in and let me share screen here. And I would suggest that people write down their questions because the next slide is going to give you a next question, or the next slide will give you the next question. So write them down when they come up for you, or on your phone, or get a piece of paper. And let's take a look at this thing. So I appreciate the opportunity to do this. My goal is to bring awareness to people to check that the rule in functional medicine is test, don't guess. You know, that you can't guess whether you're functioning adequately and reducing the amount of tissue degeneration before you get symptoms. You can't guess. Yes, well, I feel fine. Well, but wait, every autoimmune disease is going up 4 to 9% a year. Every one of them, every year. And as you said, cancer is going through the roof. So there's something going on that people are not aware of. So the reason I'm doing this is because this is my boss. And Einstein said the problems we have today cannot be solved with the same level of thinking that created the problem. And so our goal with our son, who is now almost 4, is that he learns to think outside the box. He thinks for himself, he explores, he asks questions. We try our best to guide him, actually not parent him, but rather steward him, so that he's thinking for himself and always taxing himself a little bit more, you know, just thinking for himself and thinking for himself. That's our goal.
Have you heard of PEMF therapy for cancer? Well, this podcast is brought to you by Dr. Pollock, and he wants to share with you the groundbreaking research of pulsed electromagnetic field therapy in the treatment of cancer. Studies show PEMF therapy can help control the cancer process and give safe, non-toxic, and non-invasive symptom management. PEMF therapy may enhance other cancer support and treatments, lower inflammation, and promote tissue healing. Studies show it's possible to improve your general well-being and recuperate from surgery, radiation, and chemo better and more quickly. Embrace a comprehensive approach to cancer treatment with PEMF therapy, a vital tool on your path to prevention, treatment, and recovery. For caring and professional guidance and recommendations from Dr. Pollock, go to drpollock.com/intro to cancer. That's drpawluk.com/intro to cancer.
And this is a book that everyone should read. It came out back in the 60s, and there's a revised version of it. But Hans Selye was the man, the researcher who coined the word stress with health issues. Before that, the word stress was associated with steel girders and how much pressure they could take before they crack. And he put it in perspective for our own bodies and what happens over a lifetime of too much pressure on the girders, too much stress, and how it is a primary setup in the development of every single disease. And I loved his dedication here, because it relates so much to what we're doing today, what we're talking about. Nor so naive as to think they can do so without intellectual effort. You know, we've got to be taking a look at things that we may not be familiar with and see if it relates to us. So this presentation is a paradigm expanding, thought-provoking engagement on the path to setting priorities in getting healthier. So I encourage you to write down your questions and your thoughts so that they can be addressed.
Also, no, I just want to mention, I don't know if we've just mentioned the name of that book. The name of that book was The Stress of Life. For people who are only listening on iTunes, Spotify, and so forth, they won't see the images. It was called The Stress of Life.
Stress of Life, right. It's just a classic. You know, he explains to us things like a young man that unfortunately dies of trauma, his adrenal glands, they sit on top of the kidneys. The adrenal glands are the size of a walnut. A young man that dies, unfortunately, of disease, same age, his adrenal glands are the size of a peanut. They've shriveled up, and the adrenal glands can't handle the stress of life anymore. And so he talks about how we wear down. It's really a great primer to understand the wear and tear on our bodies from the life that we've lived so far. So for years, if I read a study that was what did they say, I would take the front page of that study or a graph from the study, and I tape it on the ceiling of my bedroom. So when I go to sleep at night, I'm going, oh yeah. And then sometimes I'd think about, I'd have an idea on that topic, you know, and I had a little pen and paper next to my bed. And I'd write it down, and in the morning say, oh, that's right, I did, that's right. And what I was doing was giving myself permission to think outside the box, giving myself permission to think about areas that kind of caught my attention. And nowadays I recommend people, you know, whatever the idea is, or if it's a doctor, the study that you've read or you've heard about or the article, tape it on your refrigerator door. You don't have to tape it on the ceiling of your bedroom, just, you know, or on the mirror in your bathroom, somewhere where you're going to see it. And then you'll be driving down the road, and you're driving down the road, and all of a sudden you say, oh, you know, on that, I wonder if that means, and you just start giving yourself permission to think a little differently, to expand how you look at a particular topic.
Anything. You know, I saw on that, I love that idea, because in, you know, there are so many interesting studies. I've looked at, you know, thousands of studies over the years. I'm sure you've looked at so many more. And there are some that just stick out in my mind so profoundly, like that really make you think deeply. There was a
Yes.
number of studies that were done on cancer cells in petri dishes, where literally they brought in Qigong master practitioners who, what they did was practice Qigong, sending life force energy from their body to the petri dish. And they had, placebo controlled, so they had petri dishes that they didn't send the Qigong energy to from the body, and ones that they did. And they saw the ones that they were, the Qigong teacher was sending the energy to the cancer cells in the petri dish, literally killed the cancer cells, created apoptosis in those cells, and destroyed the cancer cells. And the normal cell, the cancer cells in the other dish, obviously nothing happened because they didn't do anything to it. And those are like, those would be the kinds of studies that I would print. Same thing. I've printed those out. I've saved them in Dropbox. I've pulled them up in my, screen and looked at them from time to time. I'm like, this is so fascinating.
Yes,
That we have these
exactly
kinds of
right.
studies.
And I encourage everyone to do that. On your refrigerator, the mirror, your bathroom, anywhere that you would just see it. And the result is somewhere down the road, maybe in an hour, maybe 3 days, maybe a week, you're going to think about that in a new way. You're going to have another thought about that particular fact that you were reading. Because, our goal here is to dive in. It's just to dive into whatever topic captures your interest so that you can learn enough on that particular topic to feel competent in it. And it expands your realm, your horizons every single time. Now, Aldous Huxley made a quote a number of years ago that resonates today so much. Medical science has made such tremendous progress that there's hardly a healthy human left. And that's not some cutesy little joke. The science behind it is pretty jaw-dropping. Life expectancy has increased by 3 decades since the mid-20th century, since the 1950s, 1960s. But parallel health span is much slower. It hasn't increased at the same rate. And when you look at this graph, for those that can see the graph, you see that the population on the planet in 1950 was about 2 billion. Now it's about just over 6 billion. And you look at the percentage of the population that is less than 70 and older than 70, and you see somewhere around 1975 or so, there was just this skyrocket of people over 70 as a percentage of the total population. And now we've got so many more people on the blue line, which means over 70 years old, than ever before in history. And as you get older, you get sicker. Most people get sicker, so there's more sick people. Every autoimmune disease is going up 4 to 9% a year, every one of them, because there's more elderly people and there's more toxicity we're exposed to. But this is an interesting concept to understand why there's so much more disease than ever before. There's more old people, and they've lived a lifestyle exposed to so many toxins that their bodies are breaking down. The societal triumph of longevity is plagued with debilitating morbidity, meaning getting sick. Usually, towards the end of life, it's accentuated. And the gap between total lifespan and healthy lifespan continues to get wider. Males live on average to 78.8 years. That's the average. But the average healthy male life expectancy is 62.4. That means the last 16 and a half years of a man's life is with disabilities, in poor health. Women live a little bit longer. They lived until about 83, and it's the last 20 years of their life are in poor health. I don't want to be in a wheelchair or, have a stroke and half my body is not working so well anymore. But these are the numbers of what's happening, or diabetes and cardiovascular diseases, and where I can't walk up a hill, or whatever the morbidity is that we're suffering from. There's more of it for people now than ever before in history. 1/5 of an individual's life is lived with morbidity. And I propose that a therapeutic vision for all of us is to reduce the distance between your total lifespan and your healthy lifespan. So if you reduce that distance, you've got more healthy years before you go into disability. And if you think about that, that just kind of makes sense. But if you put that concept on your refrigerator about increasing your healthy lifespan, I don't know if you're going to increase your total lifespan. I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. You know, but the number of years that you're disabled, you certainly can reduce that and increase the number of years that you have full health and vitality. You certainly can do that. So when do these diseases begin? There's a couple of basic concepts here that will help you in understanding how to increase your healthy lifespan. And the first is that the Center for Disease Control tells us that 14 of the 15 top causes of death in the world are chronic inflammatory diseases. It's always inflammation, except unintentional injuries, an accident. Everything else is an inflammatory disease. It's always inflammation. So how important is that? If you want to extend your healthy lifespan, and inflammation is the mechanism that's causing whatever disease you get, it becomes critically important that this becomes a priority for you to learn how to reduce the amount of inflammation you have. This drawing, and for those of you that are listening only, I'll describe it. I saw this drawing and I started drooling and I laughed. And I called the author, you know, his name's David Furman, he's at Stanford. And I called him, I introduced myself, said, you know, I saw your graph in that article and I started drooling. So he started laughing too. And I said, it's just brilliant because he's got three gears next to each other and they overlap, the spindles on the gears overlap. So if you turn the gear on the left, it turns the one in the middle at the same time. And when the one in the middle turns, it turns the one on the right at the same time. They all move together. Now on the left, the gear is how we live our lives. If we get chronic infections, or if we don't exercise, or if we're packing extra weight and we've got obesity, or if we have a bad gut, too many bad guys in the gut called dysbiosis, or the type of foods we eat, these are all spindles on the gear on the left side, or increased stress hormones, or not good quality sleep, or the accumulation of toxins in our body, lead, mercury, arsenic, organic compounds, glyphosate, all of that stuff, mold. So those are the spindles of the gear on the left. And when that turns, it automatically activates the middle gear, which is an immune system activated to protect you from whatever that thing is, and your immune system starts producing inflammation. And when that gear turns, it turns the gear on the right, and that's how we manifest our condition, whether it's a neurodegenerative disease, an autoimmune disease, depression, cancer, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, osteoporosis, it doesn't matter. The disease doesn't matter. Let me back that up to that picture again, because it's every disease occurs this way. I can't think of one that doesn't. They all occur because of excess inflammation, trying to protect you from something that activates your immune system, which then is the contributor damaging the tissue over time while you feel fine. You didn't get cancer when you got the diagnosis. You had the cancer developing for years before that. And then flares up because you've killed off so much tissue, or cardiovascular disease or diabetes. They're all the same. They're decades-long diseases. Most of them, the mechanisms are going on for decades. I'll show you some of the science on that.
Now,
And
the one thing I wanted to mention there too, which I love this, I love that image as well, by the way, is can you go back to that image really quick?
Sure.
Again, for those who aren't watching, you're only listening, I would recommend going to the YouTube to be able to see this. It's such a great example. And the problem is, I think, in modern
Wait,
medicine.
Nathan, are you drooling?
Yeah, I'm drooling.
Yeah.
Well, and it just makes, it makes you see, or it gives a visual, I think, for a lot of people as to what the major problem of our conventional medical approach is to these health conditions as well, is they look at the immune system very often as the culprit, right? You have an
Right.
overactive immune system. That's how autoimmune disease is described. Your immune system is causing the inflammation. So we're going to give you immunosuppressants. We're going to suppress your immune system. We're going to give you steroids. We're going to give you drugs that downregulate your immune system. And in some cases, some of those things in small doses might be useful for certain people, but very often it is always the things on the left here that you just described, diet and lifestyle in most cases, that are
Exactly.
driving the immune system to then become overactive because it's trying to save your life. It's trying to save your body, right? It's trying
Exactly
to
right.
save itself. And so it's not the immune system that's the problem, it's the diet and lifestyle.
Right. Your immune system is just trying to protect you. So the million-dollar question is, what is it trying to protect you from? That's what you have to find out. And for neuroinflammatory diseases, the neuroinflammatory state in most cases doesn't originate in the central nervous system, in the brain, in the central nervous system. It's systemic, means it's what's happening from the neck down that contributes to the inflammation in the brain. So if you have brain symptoms, whether it's seizures, children with drug-resistant epilepsy, which means they've tried at least three drugs and they're not working. They then qualify for the diagnosis of drug-resistant epilepsy. In the Journal of Gastroenterology, they published a paper that 50% of kids with drug-resistant epilepsy go into complete remission on a gluten-free diet.
With the cold and flu season here, it's critically important that we enhance and strengthen our immune systems. Yes, would you agree? The problem is, though, that there's so much confusion out there when it comes to what actually works for our bodies and for our health. Well, I'll tell you what I used. I used Maison Beljanski's wellness products. Maison Beljanski's products are backed by science to not only help empower the immune system, but can support detoxification and contribute to our overall health. Coming from Europe, the all-natural Beljanski formulas are now available in the United States and are recommended by top doctors everywhere. A lot of the colleagues I work with, functional medicine practitioners that work with patients with all kinds of diseases, are recommending Maison Beljanski's products to their very own patients. As a special sponsor of this podcast, Maison Beljanski has included a very special discount offer for all of my listeners. You can get 15% off your first order using the promo code Nathan, and you'll always enjoy free shipping when you order four products or more. You can grab your wellness products today at maisonbeljansky.com. That's MAISONBELJANSKI, maisonbeljansky.com, and use code Nathan for 15% off.
It's
Wow,
like, what?
that's huge.
50%. Well, how come neurologists don't know that? Because it's in a gastroenterology journal, and neurologists don't read gastroenterology journals. They read neurology journals. But the problem is not in the head. That's where the manifestation is. It's over on that left side of those three wheels, something in lifestyle that's activating the inflammation that's manifesting as seizures
So you're
in that
saying
child.
drug, so you're saying that study showed 50% of drug-resistant epilepsy patients, by going on a gluten-free diet, were able to reverse epilepsy.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yes. Yeah, this is the kind of stuff that I started reading back in the early 2000s, these kind of papers that just got me so fired up to go out in the world and say, hey, we just need to learn more about wheat and about gluten and the dangers of this stuff. It was that kind of shocking information. I mean, if you're a parent with a child that's got seizures, you really want to know this. You really want to know this just to check. You just have to check. Is my child's immune system fighting gluten? That's all you have to do is check. And it's a simple finger prick test to find out. Okay, let's move on. So if 14 of the 15 top causes of death are chronic inflammatory diseases, when do you think the chronic nature of the inflammation begins for the person diagnosed? It begins not months, years, it's decades before the diagnosis. Growing evidence suggests that antibodies precede the onset of the symptoms of autoimmune diseases by many, many years. And depending on the disease, the biomarkers of that disease can be identified with simple testing 3 to 25 years before a diagnosis. That's why Nathan did the test, to nip something in the bud that may occur 3 to 25 years from now, is to identify the spectrum, the mechanism that's going on. And this is the article that was game-changing for us in functional medicine back in 2003. This is Melissa Arbuckle at the VA, and she published this paper in the New England Journal of Medicine. And she looked for people with lupus in the VA center she was at. And there were 132 people with lupus in that VA center. Now, if they're in a VA center, they're veterans. If they're veterans, they were in the armed forces. If they were in the armed forces, they had their blood drawn many, many times over the years when they were healthy in the Navy or the Army or the Air Force. What most people don't know is the government's been saving and freezing almost all of that blood since 1978. They've got tens of millions of samples of our service people's blood. Arbuckle knew this, so she asked for permission to look at the blood of the currently diagnosed lupus patients when they were healthy in the Marines or healthy in the Navy. And she got permission. What did she find out? She found out that, and there are 7 antibodies to lupus, that the antibodies are present years, they're elevated years before there's ever a symptom of lupus, and that they follow a predictable course. And this is the graph of all 7 antibodies, and the horizontal zero line is normal levels, and everything above that is elevated levels. And you see that all 7 antibodies elevate more each year until they hit a threshold, and here come the symptoms. Why? Because when you have elevated antibodies, you're killing off more cells than you're making. Anytime you get an H on a test, meaning high, sometimes your doc says, well, you don't have any symptoms. Let's just wait and see. Let's watch this. What are they waiting for? They're waiting for more tissue to be damaged until you get symptoms. But if it's high or if it's in the red zone, you got a problem right now. It just hasn't killed off so much tissue yet. Nathan's got a problem with his NeuroZoomer Plus, but he's not suffering with dementia because he's nipping it in the bud.
I don't know if I can truly testify to that. You'd have to ask my wife if that's totally true or not.
But. I understand that one. I get that.
She would probably tell you I have dementia, but actually, we better not ask her. Yeah.
Well, you know, I did a telomere test recently, and it came back, and I was startled, and I called the lab and talked to the lab director. I said, "Is this accurate?" And he said, "Yeah, we've been expecting your call. We ran it twice to make sure. I have the telomeres of an 11-year-old. Wow. And I said, "Well, my wife says I have the emotional stability of an 11-year-old, so I'm with you there."
It makes sense.
It makes sense, right? All right, so this is Arbuckle, and she identified that these antibodies are elevated years beforehand. And this is the graph she did of the summary of all 7 antibodies. They go up every year, every year, every year. Some of those antibodies were elevated 11 years beforehand. And she made this graph up this drawing. She said, first you have normal immunity. That means you've got a normal level of antibodies to your thyroid or to your brain or to your joints or your skin. We all have some antibodies. Why? Because they're part of the process of getting rid of the old cells, making room for the new cells called autophagy. They're part of that process. So we all have some antibodies to our own tissue. That's good. But when you have elevated antibodies above the normal line, you're killing off more cells than you're making. It's never neutral when they're elevated. You may not have symptoms, but by definition, you're killing off more cells than you're making. That's why it's elevated. So first you have the normal level, then you have benign autoimmunity, which means you have elevation, killing off more cells than you're making, but you don't have any symptoms. Then you get symptoms, that's called pathogenic autoimmunity, and then eventually you get a diagnosis. This is a beautiful graph to show the influence of genetics and our environment and how those feed the progression of this inflammatory state. Now, to increase healthy lifespan, this is where it all ties in. To increase healthy lifespan, we must address these imbalances before extensive tissue damage. That's the key here. And there's a word for it, it's called the prodrome or prodromal period. It means when you can identify a disease mechanism long before there's a disease. It's derived from the Greek word prodromos, which means precursor. And the prodromal period in this graph that Arbuckle put together is when it's benign, you know, when you're elevated, killing off more cells than you're making, but you don't really have symptoms yet. That's the prodromal period. And now we have really good sensitive tests that we can identify for many of these diseases, the prodromal period. Why is the Neural Zoomer Plus such a sensitive and useful introductory test to do? Why do I do it on every patient? It's because your brain is the canary in the coal mine. Now, a canary in a coal mine is a reference to, in olden days, miners, coal miners, would carry caged canaries down into the mines with them. And if there was any methane or carbon monoxide in the mine, the canary would die before the levels of the gas reached those that were hazardous to humans. So when the canary stopped singing, someone would go over there and see what's going on. And if the canary dropped dead, they blow a whistle, everyone gets out of there immediately. That's a canary in the coal mine. Elevated antibodies are a canary in the coal mine of what's going on in your body right now. That's the way you think about elevated antibodies. And the brain is about 2% of body weight, but it has 18% of the total blood volume at any one time. There's more blood in the brain than its body weight. It's saturated. It's constantly saturated. And it's got about 20% of the oxygen of the body at any one time. It's only 2% of the weight. And in kids, it goes up to 50% of the total oxygen in the body that's in the brain at any one time. Why is this important? Well, we know that the brain contains more than 10 billion capillaries. That's about 400 miles of blood vessels in your brain. So all that blood's in there traveling around, carrying oxygen, carrying nutrients to every cell in your brain, because that's your hard drive. You know, that's the main hard drive of your computer. And it's just operating constantly. It's metabolically one of the most active of all organs. This consumption of oxygen provides the energy required for its intense activities. The most reliable data on cerebral metabolic rates, you know, how your brain's working, is obtained in humans when you look at this. So if you have chronic systemic inflammation in your bloodstream and you don't know because you feel fine, where are you likely to see the first indicators of the accumulative damage of this constant inflammation in the body? It just makes sense. One of the first indicators is going to be your brain, because that's where the concentration of blood is more than anywhere else. in the tissue that has the most pooling of the blood carrying these molecules of inflammation. If there's inflammation in your bloodstream because something about exposure and lifestyle, and it's the blood hangs out in the brain longer than anywhere else, it's more likely to cause damage in those brain cells than anywhere else. That's why we do the NeuroZoomer Plus on every single patient that comes in, because it's an excellent biomarker of early and ongoing brain damage and deterioration. There's no other test like it that I've seen. I wish I, you know, the lab is excellent. I wish I had stock in the lab, but I don't. I wish I did, because they're just doing such great work. So many doctors have been jumping on board doing these kinds of tests because we get such useful information for our patients. Now, some of you remember back in 2017, the articles in the paper, newspaper, saying that Alzheimer's is going to bankrupt Medicare because more and more people are getting Alzheimer's and it's so expensive to try and take care of them. Well, the government brought a commission together of the world's best scientists. They brought them to Washington and said, figure this out. What are we going to do? And it took them 2 years. And this advisory council came out with their report. When they came out with their report, they included a drawing, which for me was another one of those that went on my ceiling and had me drooling. This is the drawing from their report. Now, what's important here to see first is the prodromal stage. Remember, we talk about prodromal stage before symptoms with lupus, that it was 5, 6, 7, 11 years beforehand. Well, the prodromal stage of Alzheimer's goes on for over 20 years and there's no symptoms. You feel fine. Now, this is the world's best scientist trying to figure out how to avoid bankrupting Medicare, right? And then after 20 plus years, you go to mild cognitive impairment. What's that? That's when you walk out in the parking lot and say, now, where did I park my car? I don't remember what row I parked my car in. Or where did I put my keys? Or what's the name of that person that's walking towards me? I know them. Come on, what's her name? What's her name? That's mild cognitive impairment, short-term memory loss. Oh, I'm just stressed. I'm getting, no, your brain cells are being killed off. That's what's going on. So you've got 25 to 30 years of this inflammation killing off brain cells, killing off brain cells, killing off brain cells before you ever get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's. And then it just progresses from there. That's why the NeuroZoomer Plus is such an excellent biomarker. You identify these antibodies early that are elevated. Now, Nathan had a lot of them in the green zone, which means they're normal amount of antibodies there. Great, glad to see it. And more, his test is one of the better tests I've ever seen for a first test. And so kudos to you, Nathan, for all that you've done in the past. Now, here is that prodromal period in Arbuckle's article. And it's the same thing before there are ever symptoms. And here is the prodromal period in the brain report, in the Alzheimer's Commission article. Same thing, before there are symptoms. The scientists are trying to tell us that there's this window of opportunity to address this stuff before you kill off so much tissue that it's really, really difficult to arrest and reverse it. Individuals who are at rise to developing an autoimmune disease should be advised to refrain from the activities and lifestyle which endangers their health and quality of life. That's everything on that left side of the wheel. Those categories on the left side. That's why that map goes on your refrigerator, because you keep looking at that and say, oh, you know, I've not really thought too much about sleep, and maybe I need to put a little attention on sleep, or about exercise, or whatever it should be. But that map just reminds you of the categories that you want to look at. And we know now there have been so many studies on this. We know Arbuckle started it in 2003, but we now know if you have any of the antibodies to lupus, it's 94 to 100% positive predictive value. You're getting lupus within 7 to 10 years. Scleroderma, here's the antibodies within 11 years. It's 100%. And there's rheumatoid and Sjogren's and primary antiphospholipid syndrome. Now, primary antiphospholipid syndrome, there's three antibodies, and one of them, anti-beta-2 glycoprotein 1, is the antibody that is often responsible for unexplained miscarriages. It's an autoimmune mechanism forming clots that go into the placental artery. And so the women will have a miscarriage, but nobody checks for these antibodies because the patient doesn't have the symptoms of primary antiphospholipid syndrome when they're 25 or 30 years old. It'll take 11 years after the antibodies are elevated before they would have the disease. But in the meantime, this may be, and I've had a couple of patients where this was the mechanism for recurrent miscarriages, and we identified it, and then they had healthy pregnancies and healthy babies. Hashimoto's, thyroid disease, it's 7 to 10 years, primary biliary cirrhosis, 25 years, diabetes, 14 years, Addison's, Crohn's, celiac. You see that the science is really clear now. When you've got these elevated antibodies, you've got a problem. You've got a huge problem. So this was the prodromal stage of brain deterioration. This was the one that I showed you that was so jaw-dropping at 20 years. This is why we do the NeuroZoomer Plus on every patient that comes in, because it's the earliest biomarker that I know of tissue damage systemically from chronic inflammation. And now let's go to Nathan's test. This is Nathan's test results. And you see in the green category, there the majority of these antibodies are in the green category. I mean, he's making some, but it's the right amount just to make new cells, get rid of the old and damaged cells, make new cells. But he's got a couple of categories we're going to talk about. The way you look at these in general, because there's 53 markers here, and it can be mind-boggling to try to interpret these until you've had to put some time into it. So you look at it in categories. The first category is brain autoimmunity. And there, he's got five antibodies. I don't know why that disappeared. Let me back that up again and see if I can get that to stay. Nope, I can't get it to stay. Okay, there are five antibodies elevated in the brain autoimmunity category. So what is fueling that? A few of them we know really clearly what is most often the complication. So when you can't digest gluten completely, and no human can, those partially digested peptides can be mistaken by the immune system as a harmful component of a bug or of a virus. And if the immune system thinks it's looking at a bug in your gut, it's going to activate inflammation to kill the bug. And that's, we aren't talking about gluten today, but this is one that's really important to know about, because these undigested food molecules can cause a leak of the blood-brain barrier, which is, you've heard of leaky gut, this is leaky brain. And what happens is that for many, many people, when they get these undigested gluten fragments, they cause a breach of the blood-brain barrier, leaky brain. And when you get leaky brain, you get lots of inflammation in your brain. That's the brain autoimmunity that we're talking about here. For example,
So gluten does the same thing in the brain as it does to the intestinal lining, where it will actually can tear open little, basically allow the gluten proteins to slip through into the bloodstream out of the digestive tract. That's right.
That's exactly right.
It does the same thing in the brain, though. And how does it do it In the brain,
That's
is it
right.
because it's gone into the bloodstream and now it's going into the brain and doing the
One
same
of the
thing?
things that happens with gluten coming out of the stomach into the small intestine, you activate the sentry standing guard there that's watching everything that's coming out of the stomach, every morsel. Why? Because our ancestors, their number one concern was finding food. We've only been farmers in agriculture for 10,000 years. Before that, we were nomads. We followed the herds. That means you're walking every day or you're walking regularly and you're looking for food to eat. That was the number one thing. And they often ate food that had bad bugs on it. And if they didn't have a good defense mechanism against the bad bugs, they died and they didn't reproduce. So there's no offspring from them. But if they had a good defense mechanism, sentries standing guard inside the gut, that whenever a bug came down with the food, you activate the immune system to kill the bug, then you survived. And for all of us here today, that's our ancestors. So we all have this survival mechanism, every single one of us, that is called toll-like receptor 4. It's a sentry. I think of the soldiers at Buckingham Palace with those big hats. They're dormant. They don't do anything. But don't mess with those guys. Do not mess with those guys, right? So, but if they see something, if they see a bug, they destroy. They do two things. First, they send a message to increase zonulin. Zonulin opens up the tight junctions. Now here comes leaky gut. Why? Because when you have a leaky gut, water comes from your body into the gut to wash the bug out with the poop. Leaky gut is not bad for you. Leaky gut saves your life every single day. Excessive leaky gut is bad for you. So that's the first thing that the toll-like receptor does, is it activates zonulin, so you get leaky gut. Well, those zonulin proteins are also in the lining of the blood-brain barrier. And you've got toll-like receptor there also. And the same thing, it sees these gluten molecules, it activates them, and you zonulin, increase zonulin, you open up the blood-brain barrier. It's the same mechanism. And at Harvard, what they teach, and this is the exact quote because I've said it so often, gluten is misinterpreted as a harmful component of a microorganism. The amino acid structure of these poorly digested components of wheat look like the outer shell of a bug. And so your immune system is going to fight it every single time it sees it, without exception. And this happens to every human.
Now, what about people who go? I'm sure you've heard this. I hear this from clients and patients and people all the time. Is, oh, I can't eat gluten here, but I go to Europe and I can eat, all the bread and pasta and I don't have any issues.
Yeah, that's actually not the case. So gluten activates the immune system to fight it. It's other components of wheat called FODMAPs that cause the bloating and the gas and the abdominal cramps and all of that. And the gluten, the wheat in Europe is lower in FODMAPs. So there's less gut symptoms. So people feel fine when they go there. But they still activate the immune system. They still get all of the inflammatory, like in your case, you've got elevated antibodies to Purkinje cells. And as this slide shows, when you have antibodies to gluten, they can cross-react. It's called molecular mimicry, and they can attack your Purkinje cells. Those antibodies to gluten will attack that component of your brain called Purkinje cells. So you get all this inflammation in your brain from the antibodies to gluten. Then your body makes more antibodies to Purkinje cells to get rid of the old and damaged Purkinje cells. And so you get more elevation of Purkinje cells. And here comes the inflammatory cascade in your brain. The same thing occurs with cerebellum in your brain, that the gluten protein called gliadin, and also the proteins in milk called butyrophilins will cross-react with the cerebellum in your brain. In our practice, 26% of everyone that has elevated antibodies to gluten also has elevated antibodies to cerebellum, 26% of them, means killing off brain cells, killing off brain cells, killing off brain cells. This is why people in their 70s can't run up and down stairs, is because they've lost so many cerebellar cells, it's hard to keep their balance. But in many people, and it's called gluten ataxia when it gets really bad. But for many people, it's because of a sensitivity to wheat that didn't give them gut pain, so they didn't pay attention to it. Next one for you after the brain autoimmunity is infections. And you have seven different antibodies elevated to infections. And these are strongly associated with the deposit of beta amyloid and tau proteins. So when your brain is fighting cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr, streptococcus bacteria, the amount of inflammation in your brain is quite high. So this is an area that would be good to spend maybe 6 months to a year building your immune system to go after viruses, to really focus on that more than you may have in the past. Now, this could have been a lot worse in the past. It could have been. There's six more different infections that are tested for, and you didn't have any of those. So it could have been much worse than it is now. But this just suggests putting some attention on enhancing or strengthening your immune response against viruses.
Now these are viruses most people have or have had at some point in their life, right? We're looking at Epstein-Barr, but for people who can't see, looking at Streptococcal A, most of these are, so there's Epstein-Barr, cytomegalovirus, Epstein-Barr, Streptococcal A. So that
Right.
the Epstein-Barr, the one it shows like three or four times, it those are just different antibodies for it or different antigens, for example. Is that what they are?
Those are different components of the Epstein-Barr virus that your immune system's going after.
Okay. So it's showing like so it shows one, two, three, four. So Epstein-Barr shows up four times, so it's very likely, right?
Yes.
And then cytomegalovirus shows up twice, and then Streptococcal A shows up. And then what are the other ones? Is this
And Streptococcus is a bacteria notorious in the oral microbiome. So this is a case where I would be changing the person's toothpaste. I'd be giving them more oral care, more focus on creating a healthier, diverse microbiome in your mouth. You know, we swallow 1 liter a day of saliva, adults, 1 liter a day. And if your oral microbiome's out of balance, if you get pink water when you brush your teeth because you get a little bit of blood in the water, things like that, you've got gingivitis, and that's leaky gums. And that's the only reason that I know of as to why dentists give antibiotics before they work in your mouth. Because when they work in your mouth and they squirt some water in there, you spit it out and it's red with blood, they gave you leaky gums. And it takes 3, 4 days for the leaky gums to heal. So in the meantime, if you've got strep in your mouth, you have a history of strep infections in your life, and you've never really done an oral microbiome rebuilding program, so you likely have high amounts of strep, then the strep can go through the leaky gums into the bloodstream. And if it goes through the leaky gums into the bloodstream, it can set up shop anywhere in your body and start to colonize. And when it starts to colonize, now your immune system recognizes it and says, "Whoa, I better fight this," and you make antibodies to strep, like you've got here. Well, the antibodies to strep are in your bloodstream trying to kill strep everywhere it finds it, but strep has a molecular mimicry with the valves of your heart, and the antibodies will attack the valves of your heart. That's rheumatic fever, and that'll kill you. So to prevent that, Dentists give antibiotics so they're in your bloodstream, so any little strep bacteria from your mouth that gets through the leaky gums into the bloodstream gets killed right away. It doesn't have a chance to colonize. That's why they give you antibiotics. It's a shotgun approach to protect you against something that you may or may not get.
Yeah, makes sense. But all the other consequences that come with antibiotics often, in my opinion, are not worth it.
Exactly. Now, you did not have antibodies elevated to herpes. That was in the green category, which is great, but this is a little bonus for people because so many people get cold sores. So many people have herpes virus when testing for it. Somewhere around, in my practice, 60% of everyone I test will have elevated antibodies to herpes. So I wanted to give everyone an appreciation for what happens when you have herpes. And so these researchers, they were so clear. They said, we are researchers and clinicians working on Alzheimer's disease or related topics, and we write to express our concern that one particular aspect of the disease has been neglected, even though treatment based on it might slow or arrest Alzheimer's progression. We refer to the many studies, mainly on humans, implicating specific microbes in the elderly brain, notably herpes simplex 1, chlamydia pneumoniae, and several types of spirochetes in the etiology of Alzheimer's, meaning the development of Alzheimer's. The first observations of herpes simplex 1 in Alzheimer's brain were reported almost three decades ago, and there's currently 248 studies on herpes simplex 1 and Alzheimer's. So these cold sores that we get that usually take a week or two to go away, that's a herpes virus often. Alzheimer's associated with neuronal loss, progressive synaptic dysfunction, accompanied by the deposition of amyloid beta peptide. And their diagnostic criteria for the disease, these constitute the hallmarks of Alzheimer's, but whether there are causes of Alzheimer's or consequences is unknown. We suggest that these are indicators of an infectious etiology. And I'm not going to go, I've got a bunch of studies that show beta amyloid plaque is an immune response to microbes in the brain. It's your immune system trying to protect you, mostly from something called LPS, which maybe we'll do another show on another time. But it's an immune response trying to protect you that produces this beta amyloid plaque. And these researchers are saying, we've got a huge problem here. Microbes can cause chronic as well as acute diseases. Some microbes can remain latent in the body with the potential for reactivation, the effects of which might occur years after initial infection. Evidence for an infectious immune component is huge with Alzheimer's. Then they go through their six reasons as to why they're concerned about this. Viruses and other microbes are present in the brain of most elderly people. Although they're usually dormant, reactivation can occur after stress or immunosuppression. For example, herpes DNA is amplified in the brain of immunosuppressed patients. So when you take medication to suppress your immune system, these viruses can run rampant. Herpes produces damage in localized areas of the central nervous system, which are associated with memory, cognitive function, and affective processes, as well as personality. In the brain of Alzheimer's patients, pathogen signatures of herpes simplex 1 co-localize, meaning they're right there with the Alzheimer's pathology. They're right there. Herpes infection, as revealed by positive blood tests, is significantly associated with the development of Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's has long been known to have a prominent inflammatory component characteristic of infections. And for those that have the APOE gene, making them even more vulnerable to Alzheimer's, when you have these infections, it's made worse. If Features of Alzheimer's pathology are transmissible by inoculation of an Alzheimer's brain to primates and mice. Meaning, you take a little piece of the brain tissue of an Alzheimer's patient, which is loaded with the viruses, and you put it in an animal, they get Alzheimer's. So the next category after brain autoimmunity is brain inflammation. And these markers here that you have are with anti-dopamine receptors. Dopamine is a hormone we make, and it's the lack of dopamine that is responsible for the development of Parkinson's disease. And so these indicators of inflammation are directed towards nuclear components in the blood from patients with affective disorders. I'm going to show you a couple of studies that show this is on suicides. And people that have these antibodies elevated, the far end of that spectrum is on suicides. And they looked at patients with 16 patients with major depressive disorder, 13 with dysthymias, 10 with substance abuse disorders, 8 with adjustment disorders, meaning they didn't cope with life very well, 6 with panic or anxiety disorders, 2 schizophrenic disorders, 1 schizophrenic, and 5 with other Axis 1 disorders. So they looked at all these different categories of cognitive and brain dysfunction, and what did they find? The patient group showed a much higher titer of dopamine antibodies compared to the control group. And when you look at the graph, this is an OMG. Of those that had the elevated antibodies are above the dotted line, the horizontal dotted line. These are the ones that attempted suicide. Almost all of them had elevated antibodies to dopamine receptors, which means when people have these markers elevated, some will have 40% of them that I've seen will have both of them elevated. They're more susceptible to anxiety, depression, schizophrenic tendencies, severe depression. And, you know, Nathan, given the lifestyle you live, it's really kudos to you that, you know, you're stable, you have a healthy life, healthy family. If you had been throwing gasoline on the fire with an inflammatory lifestyle, you would probably be more vulnerable to your brain not working as well as it's working right now.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And this is definitely a big eye-opener for people, for sure. I mean, to see these, you know, markers and then to know, I think there's a lot to do with, you know, aside from diet and you know, toxins and different things, foods and so forth, that can contribute to all this. You know, I have a deep spiritual practice in my life, and I meditate daily, and I have, you know, a very purposeful life. And so I'm, you know, every day I'm very peaceful and very happy in my life. And so to know that if I didn't have those practices, and if I, let's say I was eating a really inflammatory diet and was really, I'd say, living a kind of a standard American way of living, very stressed, you know, not much spiritual purpose, not much purpose in life, not much happiness on a daily basis, stressed out all day, and all the toxins and food and chemicals and drinks that are, you know, cigarettes and alcohol and all these things that are going in people's body every single day, no wonder so many millions and millions of people are depressed and suicidal and hating life and just have no real direct, feel like they don't have anything to really live for. They live because they live, but they don't feel like they have anything to live for.
Exactly right.
And that's how, when I was a teenager, I was that way, because that's exactly how I was. I was suicidal, and because I had nothing to live for, you know?
Kudos to you, man. Kudos. Really kudos that you developed the disciplines to engage with your life in a healthy way. Really kudos on that. Now, is there any family history of cognitive decline or anxiety, depression, those types of things?
Definitely.
All right,
I would
so
say
then you probably carry some genes that made that one of the weak links in your chain. You know, if you pull at a chain, it always breaks at the weakest link. It's at one end, the middle, the other end, it's your heart, your brain, your liver, wherever your genetic weak link is. If you pull at the chain, and the pull on the chain is inflammation. That's the pull on the chain. So reduce your inflammatory triggers, reduce your inflammation, and the chain doesn't break. Let's move on. Next category. There's one here specific. Well, there's actually two for food, but I've already done the gluten ones, or cerebellum and Purkinje cells. This one is called aquaporin 4. Now, when you have elevated antibodies to aquaporin 4, it's a breach of the blood-brain barrier. It's a leaky brain, and it's commonly associated with vision disturbances after enough tissue damage has occurred. And the association of this one is with MS also. And they found that MS patients with relapsing, remitting multiple sclerosis had elevated antibodies to aquaporin 4. And they also had elevated antibodies to the aquaporin 4 in four foods. And I love this graph because the darker the red, the more likely it's happening. So as you can see, aquaporins are a family of cells that are in your nervous system and in some foods, same cells. And in soy, for example, if you have a sensitivity to soy, you've got elevated antibodies to soy, you also are going to have elevated antibodies to, on the column on the right, S100B, that's a blood-brain barrier marker. Myelin basic protein is one of the antibodies primarily involved with MS development. Human aquaporin 4 and myelooligoganglioside. The correlation, when someone has aquaporin 4 antibodies elevated, they need to do the test for soy, corn, spinach, and tomatoes. It's called the Lectin-Zoomer. And I would recommend that test to you, Nathan, because I think you're going to find that maybe it's tomatoes, maybe it's spinach, you know, really good foods, but for your body, there's something that's fueling this aquaporin 4 antibodies in your brain.
Now, I eat a lot of soy, tomatoes, and spinach. I stopped eating corn. I eat all of those things organic. And the question I have about so I do eat those things pretty often. But the question I have about doing some of those antibody tests is like, is it maybe you can help clear up some of the controversy around why a lot of doctors don't. A lot of functional medical doctors don't actually like doing those kinds of tests. They say that because if you're eating a lot of those foods anyway, you're going to have those antibodies show up in your blood test.
Yeah, well,
So it doesn't necessarily give you an
if you have
accurate
a.
result of saying just because you're eating them a lot and it shows up in your blood, doesn't necessarily give you an accurate understanding of like, is this actually doing some kind of harm to you or not? Is that true?
Show me the studies on that. There's no science to that opinion that I'm aware of. And if you've got elevated aquaporin 4 antibodies, which is one of the mechanisms in development of MS and other demyelinating diseases, you need to stop throwing gasoline on the fire. So if you have elevated antibodies to tomatoes, you're done with tomatoes for at least a year, and then you recheck. And if you find it's all come down, the aquaporin 4 antibodies have come down, the tomato antibodies have come down, then have tomatoes once or twice a week for a month, and then check again. Can you eat them once or twice a month and not have a problem? So the only food that is permanent, as far as I know, when your immune system is fighting that food, the only one that's permanent is wheat. There's no exceptions. You create memory B cells to wheat, but you don't create memory B cells to tomatoes or to soy or to spinach or to corn. So if you currently have antibodies to those, you stop eating those foods because you're killing off myelin right now and your blood-brain barrier with the aquaporin 4 antibodies.
So
And then
you give your body a break from it and let those antibodies come down and then retest and see if that's what it was.
And the key is the test. That's the key. And before Vibrant came out with this technology called silicone chip technology, the tests were wrong 2 or 3 out of 10 times. That's called the sensitivity and specificity, but they were wrong on occasion. I started doing double-blind tests on patients. I would take 2 tubes of blood out of the arm, and I would label the second one Joe Smith, and I send it to the lab, and I have to pay for it myself, but I'm checking up on the lab, and 2 or 3 out of 10 times it comes back completely different, not just a little bit different, completely different. And I lost faith in all of those lab tests. When Vibrant came out in 2015 with this new technology, and Mayo Clinic calls it a new era in laboratory medicine. I mean, those were bold words, but it is because it's 97 to 100% accurate every single time. And I've done double blinds on Vibrance tests, and I've only done that 3 times because all 3 times it was right on the money, and I just didn't want to spend the money anymore, the extra money ordering, follow-up tests or piggyback tests on that. But I have not found a patient yet who had elevated aquaporin 4 antibodies who didn't have one or more of these 4 foods elevated. And
Interesting.
so there's something in there,
So
and
that's a
it's
lectin, Zoomer test.
the lectin zoomer. That's correct.
Got it.
And I'm doing one more bonus for you guys. This one came back negative for you, the RAGE antibody, which is good. And that's because you eat a really clean diet,
Well, I thought it was because I got rid of all my rage when I was a teenager,
Well, perhaps that contributes
but.
too. But RAGE stands for Receptor of Advanced Glycation End Products. And advanced glycation end products are what happens when you cook food at a high temperature. Think of bread dough when you knead bread. If you're kneading it, it's soft and kind of gooey, but you put it in the oven and now there's a crust. That's advanced glycation end products. You change the protein and carbohydrate structure of the food. So that means barbecued food where the meats are blackened from being burnt. That's advanced glycation end products. Anytime you burn food or you deep fry food, high temperature, that's advanced glycation end products. And they bind onto the receptor for advanced glycation end products. That's called the RAGE receptor. Now, this is really important because we're talking about the brain here. The blood-brain barrier is important for amyloid beta brain balance, and the blood-brain barrier regulates the transport of amyloid beta through 2 receptors. One is the LDL receptor, low-density lipoprotein of cholesterol, the LDL receptor, and the receptor for advanced glycation end products. The receptor for advanced glycation end products mediates the influx. It escorts amyloid beta into the brain. So more amyloid beta into the brain, whereas the low-density lipoprotein escorts amyloid beta out of the brain. If RAGE expression creates an increase in the influx of amyloid beta through the blood-brain barrier, how do we reduce expression of RAGE? How do you calm that one down? And you calm it down by reducing the production of advanced glycation end products. Stop eating French fries. Stop eating deep-fried foods. Stop burning your meats. Reduce your exposure to these high-temperature cooked items when oil smokes, when you're frying and you use oil that smokes, too late. When it smokes, it's oxidized and it becomes, it creates more advanced glycation end products.
Which are also directly responsible for damaging DNA, damaging mitochondria, and contributing to cancer cells in
the body.
That's right.
That's exactly right. So I just wanted to include that one as a little bit of a bonus because it comes back positive so often for people.
Mm. Yeah. Now, you can see I don't eat much fried food at all. I saute in olive oil. We get a really high quality, super clean olive oil, and I am mindful not to put the temperature so high. And we also don't saute for super long, right? But I rarely, like once in a blue moon, will eat something that's been dropped in a deep fat fryer. Yeah. I mean, super, yeah. super rare. Barbecue. I have a barbecue and I've used it once in the last 5 years. You know, for a special occasion, I think for Thanksgiving, I was like, I'm going to barbecue up, you know, something.
Sure.
You know, but yeah, it's very, very rare. Because of that exact reason.
Olive oil, my suggestion is that people avoid sauteing in olive oil and rather use avocado oil, mm-hmm. Coconut oil, which yep. have a higher smoking threshold, and then pour the high quality olive oil on the food just as you're turning the heat off.
Yeah.
So you get all those polyphenols and all the great benefit.
Yep, that's a good point. Yeah, and that's you know, and I like I said, even when we cook with olive oil, yeah, we use coconut oil as well. Even when we cook with olive oil, it's never, you know, so hot. It's on a low medium heat.
Right.
It's a lower sauteing. I never let it smoke. You know, just more to kind of get the flavor and that sort of thing. Yeah. But you know, those simple things that you learn over the years.
When someone has RAGE antibodies elevated and they're eating a diet as clean as yours, and there's no hidden treats or cheat days or things like that, some doctors say, well, have a cheat day once a week. That's utter nonsense. Well, throw gasoline on the fire once a week,
right.
You know? No. But when someone's RAGE antibodies are elevated like yours, the next thing on the checklist that you look at is total tox burden. Are there toxins, heavy metals in your body that are activating that RAGE receptor? So it could be lead, mercury, arsenic, beryllium, could be mold. So Vibrant has a total tox burden test. You know, I took 27 patients in a row and I did 7 tests on them before I ever talked to them. I didn't want to talk to them until they did the test. And they did these tests, and the results were just jaw-dropping dramatic. That we could just, I met with them after that, excuse me, got their history. They also sent me their last 5 years of test results. So I had all that reviewed. And I got together with them on Zoom and I said, well, here's your history, okay? And we did these tests, boom, 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 boom. There it is. It's all done. You know, this is certainly where you have to start. These are the major inflammatory triggers in your lifestyle right now. And out of 27 people, probably, I haven't really counted it up, but probably 23 or 24 of them was toxic chemicals, heavy metals, and food sensitivities. Mm. 3 or 4 of them, it was emotional stress and trauma and excess stress hormones.
Yep.
And I had to refer them, you know, for some counseling to include in their protocol. But for the majority of them, we nailed it right away. And the results have been dramatic since then for them. They're all very grateful.
Yeah, I imagine some of the... it'd be interesting to see. I'll redo this test in a period of time, right? In 6 months
yeah.
or a year. Because I had already, you know, I was training to be a professional athlete, and I went through too many injuries to the point where I finally stopped. And that was, I think, January, February, March of this year, where I finally took a big step back and reduced everything significantly and really started focusing on healing my body. I was training 5 hours a day. Anywhere from 2.5 to 3 to 5 hours a day for the last almost 7 years. And
what
so
type of
the
training?
moment I did that, right, like a lot of my inflammatory markers through my other blood tests that I had done, after 3 months of like just reducing that, all of that went down substantially. And so this was July. We did this test. That was January, February, March, April, May, June, July. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much of these things are impacted, you know, by me taking a step back from, because that amount of training, you're just, you know, I'm doing all these things to help my body, you know, combat the damage I'm doing through that training.
Yeah.
But there's still going to be higher elevations of, you know, inflammation and immune system struggling to try to, you know, keep up with something like the Epstein-Barr and streptococcal and that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, and you've seen the studies where intense training creates leaky gut immediately, you know, and then all the cascade effects of that one. So that's great that you've
And then
done
I should
that.
Have been sleeping 10 or 11 hours with how much training I was doing, and I was only sleeping, you know, seven or
uh-huh.
eight, which is great for a normal person who's not training 5 hours a day, you know.
Yeah.
And so not enough sleep, overtraining, you know, end up with injuries. And but anyway, so on some of these things, like what are our next steps, brain inflammation, brain, aside from what I'm already doing, right, of reduced training.
You know, what would be interesting, and it's really an academic point, but because you're in the business, you might want to redo the NeuroZoomer Plus now and see, because you've changed your life in the last 3 months. You're not training so hard.
Yep.
And was it the training that produced some of this response?
Mm.
That would be interesting, because your diet sounds very clean. Well, why are the RAGE antibodies there? Well,
or you said the RAGE antibodies aren't on mine. Those are in the green. But
oh, that's right.
You did them as a bonus.
I get so caught. I get caught in there once I get started. You're right.
No worries. But the other ones, the inflammation, the infections, right? The autoimmune markers. Yeah.
Yeah. Was your training suppressing your immune system so that it couldn't deal with what viruses you have in your body?
Yeah.
And is it better now? I mean, that's an academic question before you do anything else.
Mm.
It might be useful for you, because you're going to be working with professional athletes for your entire career. And if you can show now, look, I just stopped training 3 months. I did this test and I changed my training routine. And look, 3 months later, without doing anything else.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I'll probably redo the test then. I want to do the
lecture. It's a finger prick, so it's an easy thing to do.
Yeah. And then in terms of the gluten, so I rarely ever eat gluten, and you know, most thing I know, gluten can end up in almost everything and so many things, but we're very mindful about gluten bread, you know, any kind of wheat, certified gluten-free products. So like I stopped eating gluten years ago, and I'll have some once in a while, but you said these are in the moderate category. Just so I know,
cells and cerebellum and Purkinje, and
those are directly related to gluten.
That's the most common. It's the most common trigger. Now, what you have to understand about wheat is that once your immune system has elevated antibodies to the peptides of wheat, you create memory B cells.
Mm.
Now, when you got a shot, a vaccination for measles as a kid, they gave you the bug measles, and the brain says, whoa, what's this in the bloodstream? That's not supposed to be there, you general. And in your immune system, you've got Army, Air Force, Marine Corps generals sitting around with nothing to do. General, you now are General Measles, take care of this. General Measles builds an assembly line. The assembly line starts producing soldiers, highly trained, specific, special forces. They're called antibodies. And they go after measles, nothing else. They look for the protein structure like a vest. I call it the orange vest, like a hunter wears an orange vest. Well, they look for the amino acid structure of measles, and they're going through the bloodstream, firing their chemical bullets everywhere. When they kill all of the measles bug from the vaccination, General Measles, who's watching all this, says, okay, turn off the assembly line. We don't need more soldiers here right now. And that process takes about 2 months, 3 months when we get a vaccination. But now, General Measles is vigilant the rest of his life, and he's dormant. He's like the soldiers of Buckingham Palace. He doesn't do anything, he's dormant. But if I'm on a plane and the guy in front of me coughs into the air, measles bug, because he just came back from Mozambique, and I inhale measles bug, now it's in my bloodstream, General Measles sees this. He doesn't have to take 2 months to build the assembly line. He just has to flip the switch and the antibodies are there the next day. And it takes care of whatever I'm exposed to and I'm fine. That's how vaccinations are supposed to work, right?
Right, key word, supposed to.
Yeah, right. Now, the only food that I can find science on, memory B cells, is gluten. There are no memory B cells to dairy. There are no memory B cells to soy or to mayo. That's why you probably can eat them sometime in the future. But gluten, absolutely not, because a morsel, and it takes an eighth of a thumbnail, that's all it takes is a morsel, and General Gluten flips the switch, and now for 2 to 4 months, because the assembly line is on for 6 to 8 weeks, and then the antibodies that are produced towards the end of that 6 to 8 weeks have a lifespan of 5 to 7, 5 to 8 weeks. So you've got 3 to 4 months of antibodies from a single exposure.
Which means you have 3 to 4 months of additional inflammation happening in the body.
Additional inflammation, but for you, likely, additional cerebellar antibodies and Purkinje cell antibodies attacking your brain because of molecular mimicry. You can't be a little pregnant. You can't have a little gluten.
I can't be a little pregnant anyway, but. Oh man, this is great. I know we're out of time. So how can people get these tests for themselves?
That's really a good question. You know, I've got this whole thing set up now because I think this is so primary for everyone. If you go to thedr.com, thedoctor.com, just don't spell the word doctor out, thedoctor.com/healthspan-vs-lifespan, healthspan-versus-lifespan. It's all there for you. All about the NeuroZoomers Plus. This is all about extending your healthy lifespan closer to your total lifespan. That's the goal, and the first step is to
use that again. It's not pulling up.
Let me see the URL.
thedrdoctor.com/.
healthspan-vs-lifespan.
Healthspan-vs-lifespan. Okay.
Yes.
It's kind of a long one.
It does. I know. I said, what? There you go. It is.
So this is where they can get all the details about it, get the test.
Yeah. And there's the Blue Cross Blue Shield study. If you want to scroll down there to that one to take a look at that for just a moment. Right there. That's it. And look at that 30 to 44 age bracket right there. 373% increase.
Jeez. Early onset. In 4 years. You mentioned Alzheimer's. My neighbor is just... He's, I think, late 60s, early 70s, and just I found his wife bringing him from the hospital the other day in a wheelchair, trying to get him in the house, and he was trying to get out of the wheelchair, and she was trying to keep him in it, and he was, you know, a fall risk, and thankfully I was walking back home from a walk. I've been walking now after I eat, and doing kind of a meditative walk and listening to spiritual programs. And I'm walking back home and I see her struggling, and I just walk over there and help her get him into the house. And he's so discombobulated, doesn't really know where he is. He thinks the pictures on the wall are him and his brothers, and his wife's telling me, no, those are our sons, our three sons. You know, he was really. And I said, when did this start? Oh, it's only been a couple of weeks, you know. But over the months, little things started happening. He kind of forgot where he was driving to, or things like that started popping up. And now it's like, looks like full blown Alzheimer's or dementia, you know, couldn't remember anything he just did, didn't really know who anybody was. And it was really extreme to see that, and very sad to see that.
Yeah, it happened to my mother also, and wasn't Alzheimer's, but sepsis. Sepsis will cause those kinds of hallucinations, and that's a whole nother discussion. But
Yeah,
yeah,
but
it's.
just the point being is like, it, you know, she said he was normal up until boom, then all of a sudden, and little things happening over the time, and then now, right? It's like it seems like it came out of nowhere, but no, just as you said, this has been going on for decades
Yeah.
under the hood of chronic inflammation. Yeah. So after they go, so if people go through this, get the testing, and then do you give people, do they get support from your team on understanding the
There.
test and then what to do about it, what to clean up in
Yes.
the diet, yeah, all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
Awesome.
I think that this is such a priority. I'm dedicating my professional career for the next 3 years to this topic. And I want to carry this message all over the world that people just start looking to see what's under the surface, what's under the hood, what's going on right now. And then they can start addressing whatever it is that they find.
Beautiful. Well, Dr. Tom, I appreciate you taking the time. This has been incredibly valuable. I think people will get a ton of value out of this. I think the test is something everybody should do and see where you're at, no matter your age, and see what you have to work on. There's always something to work on, right? And I'm glad to see that, you know, this is one of the best first tests you've ever had anybody send in. So what I've been doing
It
and what we teach obviously works. And
Kudos.
there's things to improve upon, right? So, appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure, really my pleasure. Once again, congratulations. You're doing great, the things you're working on, and now you can look at those little things that are under the surface there.
Awesome. All right. Thanks. Take care.
All right, take care.
Thank you for listening to the Nathan Crane Podcast. Please make sure to subscribe and share this on social media. Then head over to nathancrane.com for your free ebook.
So when we're talking about, you know, what are these underlying causes and conditions of these chronic diseases, cancer, diabetes, heart disease, they all have very similar, if not identical, causes. And that's the thing, is when we get to the root cause of these diseases, we can not only prevent these diseases from ever happening, but empower our bodies to heal from them.
In every one of our cells, we have tens and hundreds of thousands of chemical reactions that are happening every second that are cycling back and forth. And it's like sort of a yin and yang.
And, you know, for me, the soul's purpose is evolution. It doesn't care about comfort, it cares about evolution. And so I think so long as we are following our soul, then we will evolve. And I think what sometimes blocks us from living our purpose, from manifesting that next level of our expression, is we have not evolved.
There is also a time for letting go all the expectations and relax and just breathe and be grateful for what you have achieved.